Members, I will call the meeting on Health and Human Services Reform to order. And we do have a quorum present, members. So first order of business will be to have somebody approve the minutes from our February 18th meeting. Representative Albright moves the minutes of February 18th. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The motion prevails. And members, I am going to hand the gavel over to Representative Peterson, and I'll move to the table as our bill for today is the one I'm authoring.
Thank you, Representative Mack. Today we have Representative Mack's bill, House File 795, regarding implementing a cost-benefit approach to measure the success of corrections and human services programs. Representative Mack, if you would please move your bill and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move that House File 795 be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety. And with that, members, I'll just do a brief introduction of the bill. This is going to be a familiar topic to some of you who have sat on this committee or health finance in the past. But it's something I've worked on for past 2 or 4 years. I can't remember exactly. But along with Kelly Harder here, who is from Dakota County and works on issues related to all of our social service programs. And members, basically what this bill in front of you is attempting to do is something that we've talked about regarding return on taxpayer investment. We've had an interest, and I've worked on a method by which we as policymakers would have a tool in front of us by which we could make more objective decisions in terms of understanding what our programs are doing for us and the investment that we're making in them. And in the past, we have moved this forward with not quite sure who would do the work. And since then, we have had the exciting opportunity to discover that the Pew MacArthur Foundation has been doing work with this through what they call the Results First Initiative. And Kelly Harder will speak in more depth on that. But members, basically what this bill is proposing to do is kind of put the pieces in place that we would need in order to participate with Pew on this project. And they have produced a methodology that we could bring into Minnesota and start piece by piece with some of our various public programs to implement this methodology, input our data, program data, investment data, things like that, and ultimately get information back on what kind of return on taxpayer investment that we're getting. I think as all of us recognize, our budget problems aren't going away anytime soon in terms of how we make difficult decisions with finite dollars and how we best prioritize that. And in my opinion, something like this sets us on the right path to help us as policymakers make more educated decisions. Certainly doesn't make the decisions for us, but it gives us the information that we need as we try to figure out the best way to invest our dollars. And so with that, Madam Chair, I will turn it over to Kelly Harder to continue to explain a little bit more about the program.
Mr. Harder.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you so much for allowing us to come speak with you today. My name is Kelly Harder. I in my day job am the Community Services Director in Dakota County and am here on behalf of MICA and the affiliate counties associated to that. So as Tara has said, we've been here previously, and in previous years it was more about moving forward a bill that would do a study to analyze the appropriateness and the desire of the state and the legislature to implement work that was being done on the state of Washington. The Washington State Institute on Public Policy, referred to as WISIP, they started this work over 15 years ago, and in fact it was started via a legislative bill because they continually saw more and more good ideas, great programs, and we're wanting a little more rigor behind not just knowing at the end of the day, like we're stuck is, well, how much does it cost? Maybe you get how many people it serves, but how often do you have the validity of, did it have an impact? Did it have a return on investment or not? What we're here in, with Representative Mack's bill is actually proposing an off-the-shelf shovel-ready product. And it's a product that what happened was there was so much interest around the country that Washington State Institute was spending most all their time visiting other states and legislatures talking about the value that this had for their policy and decision making. And so thanks for funding with the MacArthur Foundation. They funded Pew to work with Washington State to basically rebuild the black box. Just for one program, for example, I saw the methodology used to validate the ROTI, and it was 90 pages of mathematical formularies. I'm not a mathematician. I knew enough to say that was impressive. But what it did is it showed more than just this is a good program. And I think for all of you, what's really a struggle is you hear a lot of great ideas. You see a lot of compassion and programs at work. But at the end of the day, you have finite resources. And it stewards the taxpayer dollars. How do you do your job to know you're making the best investment? And so that this isn't a value statement of people who have really good ideas to do, but in the end of the day, it is a priority that you all have to make. It's a very hard job. It's a hard job I have to make as I go to my 7 elected officials every other Tuesday at the county level. And so how do I translate the work we do in a way that's meaningful to the electorate, that they understand what their investment's doing for them? So what I'm going to do, and in your packet, you do have these documents. I'm going to briefly go over this. So today's really about you understanding the context of what this is about, this product, and what
Remember
it means.
That item is in the jacket of your where the rest of the bill is for 974. Oh, it's in 974. Okay.
Okay. So the first document I'm going to refer you to looks like this, and it says the Pew First in your state. And so this is, so at the core, this creates a unified methodology to develop ROTI. So if I were you, you know, you have corrections departments and all their programming, human services, health, and all these other areas, and they can come at you and to you with work that's been done in a cost-benefit analysis. This would be an opportunity where and when appropriate that you have the same methodology used against and across all those programs and different departments. What role and why with Pew? Pew would come to our state if this is passed. They provide technical assistance. They provide the black box to help us learn and teach us how to do the cost-benefit analysis with these models. They provide staff and that technical support that ultimately, as that goes away, it also creates a tabletop of best practice around the country. There are 14 other state and county jurisdictions doing this work. So I know we all like to think we're pretty special up here in Minnesota, and I do believe we are as well. But when we're trying to reenter someone out of an adult juvenile, an adult correctional system, there's quite a bit of more consistency than individuality across the country. And so what programs work to address recidivism? What programs work to help divert juveniles from deeper and more costly programs? Children's mental health, adult mental health, all these areas, there is rigor and academic expertise out there that have proven what does and does not work and give you the ROI on that. As you go through this document, you will see what Pew brings as value, what the program brings as value, and then what we as a state of Minnesota sitting at a national tabletop would have to learn from what's working in other states. In order to do that, they need a letter of intent to participate from the House, the Senate, and the governor's office. The legislation, we believe, also supports the serious nature that all of you would have to incorporate this. I think it belongs first and foremost in the Reform Committee, because you can talk about reform or you can do reform. And this is a model where we've been talking about doing this for too many years. If not now, when are we going to start doing that? And I think the response that you might get from many of us is, well, we've done a results-oriented study over here, and we've done another study over there. But what do you all use consistently that has the uniformity across those programs? The second document is a results-first approach. A document for all of you. It's another quick visual that shows the value proposition that participating as policymakers in this work would do for you. And finally, the third document is a visual of the states who are participating to varying degrees, some longer than others, but these are states where they are participating in the Pew results. These are states we would sit side by side to learn what is an effective way to divert and or re-enter people from a criminal justice system successfully in a community, or address mental health, deal with commitment issues and other high-dollar realities that you're all dealing with. With that, I'm going to, if you would, direct your attention to the video screens, and there's a quick 4-minute video. So instead of me talking about what Pew does, this is actually a video that Pew themselves will give you an example of the work they've been doing in the state of Iowa. Oh, that's not it. Well, we had it ready to go. Here we go. No, that's not the right video.
Well, while we're waiting for that to come up, are there? We do have a couple people have some questions. But Representative Schultz, did you want to start?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Hi. Thanks for coming today. Yes. So there are a lot of different types of return on investment models. Do you know what they do? They use a return on community investment. Do they use a longer time frame? Sort of. How are these structured when you're comparing different programs? To look at community benefit in a cost-benefit analysis.
So, Madam
Mr.
Chair.
Mr. Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, so I appreciate you bringing that up in that there are many very rigorous and very worthy return on investment methodologies out there. And though they're out there, I'd say that's the other problem. So, for example, in Dakota County, we did a ROI on our jail reentry program. Thanks to Bush Foundation, we could afford it. It cost $90,000. It's one program. Now, it was very rigorous. It truly captured all of the costs from the whole chain, from local law enforcement picking the individual up, to detaining them at the jail, to dealing with the county attorney's office, to the court systems, to county corrections. Those are all different checkbooks. So our system isn't naturally prone that it's easy to get those true costs through there. And then you get to the debate about, so what's the value of to the community, and how much value do we put on certain elements without overstretching, where you compromise the true ROI, what it spits out. So in order for a program to even be eligible to be looked at and gone through the black box, if you would, of what they do for the ROI with the Pew Institute, it has to have reached a certain level of rigor, and it had to have been operating for a certain amount of time, and there has to have already been some evidence best practice. So there's kind of a first tier. So not everything flows through this, but when programs have reached a certain threshold and are eligible for to be considered through this, then there's certain academic rigors that have been built into the methodology. I myself am not the scientist behind that, but I can tell you it is quite significant. And after the video here, which I hopefully we're ready to go now, I also have one other document I'll show you that actually gives you a tangible what you would have in your hands.
So why don't we carry on with the video?
Let's give this one more try.
Questions.
The Pew MacArthur Results First Initiative is helping states and counties transform how they make their spending decisions, starting in criminal justice, but also expanding now to additional policy areas. We help states target their resources at programs that achieve the best outcomes and also represent the best investments for limited taxpayer dollars.
We're interested in exploring the proposition that investments in individuals at risk and in need could actually produce positive returns both for them and for society at large.
We're helping states and counties across the country implement an innovative cost-benefit analysis approach that targets investments towards programs that are proven to work.
Cost-benefit analysis is important to the states because it gives them a framework for understanding the types of investments they're making and what types of returns they're getting.
In Iowa, the Department of Corrections partnered with Results First to implement a state-specific model that helped them to make better decisions using data.
The Results First model offered us the opportunity to marry up our data with factual-based numbers as to what the costs are of not only corrections, but the cost of the offenders through the entire system. So what we did, for example, we always knew that cognitive programs were much more successful than our other programs. Till we had the Results First, we really could not assign a dollar value to that. And lo and behold, one of the first things that we calculated was the return on investment of all of our COG programs. They were wildly successful, way beyond our highest hopes.
We want the women to think about the decisions that they're making. So we do a lot of cognitive programming to get them to think about why they made the decisions they made and what do they need to do in the future so they make better decisions. We do a good job of that. 75% of our women do not come back to prison.
Iowa also used the Results First model to look at our domestic violence or our batterers program. We have used what was in the past the nationally accepted standard. It was not producing very good results. As our Results First data unfolded, we discovered that our old batterers approach, which we'd had in place for probably 12 or 15 years, was actually for every dollar we spent, it ended up costing us $3. We, like almost every correction system in the United States, can't afford to be running programs that have a negative return on investment. And it challenged us to do better, and so we did partner with the University of Iowa to create a much better program, and we are really excited about it.
There's a sense that, you know, often social policy, we don't understand exactly what's working, and having evidence and having a rigorous methodology to see how evidence can be used to inform policy making, especially at a time when local governments, state governments are experiencing fiscal constraints. It's important for policymakers to be able to allocate resources toward the programs that they know are working.
We also help our partners communicate the results of their analysis to policymakers so that state leaders or county leaders can incorporate this information into their policy and budget choices. In the case of Iowa, we work directly with the Department of Corrections staff to communicate the results to both the governor's office and to the legislature.
Anytime you can actually prove to a decision maker in our capital that you invest X, you're going to get a huge return on your investment, and you're going to decrease the people getting into the corrections continuum. And that's important, because once you're in the corrections continuum, there's a cost associated with all that we do for you. Nobody in corrections wants to see people coming back to prison again and again and again. Our mission, our value, is to make sure we give the offenders the best possible chance to be successful. And that's why we are very pleased to join in the Results First effort. And that's why we think it'll have ongoing success. I think that's really the key to all this, is can it be sustained? And I think the answer is clearly, yes, it can.
Thank you, Mr. Harder. Did you have anything you wanted to add then?
So, Madam Chair, thank you so much. What's being handed out to all of you now, and let me say, when you a state chooses to start with Pew MacArthur Foundation on the Results First, they do like out of the gate to look at those programs they've had the most rigor, and 15 years of rigor in the correction space is where they've had their most predominant experience. So what they say is they want to have success out of the gate for the states who want to have success, and that's where they best know we can learn from other states what not to do and what to do. What you're getting right now is, for a moment, if you would, imagine where you're sitting as legislators, fast forward a year or two or three, and what you have in front of you, actually, this is the product that this produces. And it's a product, I refer you to page 4. You can take your own leisurely time, as if I'm sure you don't get enough reading and material here. That just gives you a basis of what some history is. But if you get to page 4, this is what it is as we're talking about this bill. Imagine as a policymaker sitting in the reform, the budget, a finance committee, sitting in conference committee as you're making final decisions. What you have isn't just expenses, and on the top you can see it's broken out in Exhibit 1, the juvenile justice programs, adult criminal justice, but you can see just in the juvenile justice area the difference between an investment in aggression and replacement training, which, by the way, these are nationally identified best practices. And so in order for it to work, that means we at the county level and the state have to implement all the rigor that comes behind these programs. If you start trying to shortchange what the rigor is, you're going to have a compromised return on investment. So there's a lot of validity behind these programs. They're not just titles that are done in one area or another of a country. So you can see the aggression replacement has a cost-benefit net value of $65,000. It has a benefit-to-cost ratio and gives you your percentage of measure of risk. And toward the bottom, you have a scared straight program that doesn't end up as well. So, once again, I can't speak to the specific methodologies behind each of these, other than I know these are nationally practiced initiatives in juvenile. You also see However, and as the bill also addresses, we're starting in the corrections, recommending to start in the corrections and human service space, because we want to have successes out of the gate. Counties are very interested in this. This would be a value for me in my county boardroom, and as we talk to our local residents as well, so they can understand that. So it has translatability beyond this room as well. You can see they do work in child welfare, pre-K, they do work in children's mental health, adult mental health, public health, substance, and as more states are doing this, they're expanding what the portfolio of its utility might be. And with that, Madam Chair, I will be open to any questions that might be asked.
Thank you very much. And Representative Mack, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Not at this point. We can go to questions, Madam Chair.
Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the $200,000 that's being requested, what does that buy? Does that buy the model? Does that buy the analysis? Does that go to Pew or does it go to the Institute at Washington State? Who's actually doing the analysis? Are we learning how to do the analysis? Are state agencies learning how to do that and are they implementing it?
Mr. Harder?
So, Madam Chair, Representative, so it's $100,000 each year, and so Pew does not receive any funding. They're fully funded. They come to us. This is an allocation that would appropriate dollars for a designated staff individual to be positioned in a state department who would be the key liaison to the Pew Institute and really would be a liaison back to the legislature and Pew Institute, because what Pew does then for the first year is, for that one handout, they really want to help teach and get the state's capability to do this work independent of their having to be around. And as they then migrate away, we tend to be more engaged with the other states and counties across the country who are doing the very work itself. So the allocation is for a resource to be the key liaison for Pew Institute for successful implementation.
Representative
Schultz. Thank you, Madam Chair. So who's actually doing the analysis?
Mr. Harder.
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz. So the actual analysis in the long run is done here at the state level. So our recommendation we look at is to have that analysis done within the department within MMB, who would then work with the Department of Corrections or the Department of Human Services or Education, depending on what program is being evaluated.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, would you advise us to look to the University of Minnesota, for instance, as a partner to do some of the analysis? With maybe our staff aren't trained to do these returns on investment. I mean, I've done them before, but I'm sure we have a wealth of information at the University of Minnesota. Would you advise to partner with University of Minnesota,
Mr. Harder?
Madam Chair, Representative Schultz. I would always advise that the more we can partner with our academic institutions to better solidify their expertise in our areas of profession, that would be an absolute.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I get started, I have to warn everybody after watching the thing, if you notice the Iowa Capitol has green and yellow at the top on those domes, if you're at the Capitol down there, don't ask the Iowa legislators when you're in committee with them why they have Green Bay Packer colors on their I made that mistake. And Representative Mack, I'm glad you're into this. It's the opposite of what we've unfortunately been doing in corrections here. In fact, we've been phasing out a lot of these programs, which have been proven all over the country, even in Texas, Jerry Madden, who was high up in ALEC, pushed through these programs, and they've seen a huge reduction in recidivism. But my question is, this seems a lot like the Justice Reinvestment Program that CSG is doing in connection with Pew and MacArthur's Models for Change program for juveniles, which they're now expanding to 18 to 24, and which I've been part of the group here in Minnesota. Ron Solheid heads it up at the Department of Corrections. I can't think of his title, Assistant Commissioner of something, Community of Corrections or something like that. How is how, and they're in the process of putting that together here. It sure, a lot of these seem to be very similar, so how is this different from that, and why are we going to do this while we're, it looks like we're going to do the other one where I believe, I can't remember, I'm in talking to the, and oh, that one is also connected to the U.S. Department of Justice, and I think we get, they come in, and I believe if they pick our state as one of, I think they're doing eight this year, I think they pay all of the upfront costs on, if I remember right. So I guess I'm wondering, first of all, why not let them pay for it? But second of all, how does this differ, and how will they mesh together if we go ahead with and we're accepted as one of those states? Because that there's a lot more. You got not just Pew and MacArthur, but you got CSG, you got the U.S. Department of Justice, and some others on that one.
Mr. Harder.
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative, my response to you would be first and foremost to guard ourselves that this conversation or initiative is at all any type of indictment that great work isn't already being done within any of the departments, whether it's corrections or human services, health, education. I hope we all see it, because I have social services under my watch. I have corrections. I have public health. I have health care eligibility, child support, veteran services. So the issue for myself, and if I was on your side of the table, would be not that this has to be in place of or in lieu of, but what tool do you have now that has uniformity across all of the different programs that come in front of you? It also is not one size will fit all. There still has to and will be room in the industry for other ROIs that have as much validity as what you would get here as well. So I don't want this to be the result that doesn't have validity, because we need to continue to do those initiatives. My county, for example, has two proposals out right now for very similar, three national awards. Technical assistance will come. Evaluation and analysis will come with it. We will not do that in lieu of this, but I will tell you something else I've done. I have looked at their work. I've given this to my separate departments and said, what are we doing on here that is a low return, and where might we stop doing certain things and reinvest those very dollars in some of the higher returned program areas? Or maybe we should look at some of the higher return programs, because the rigor behind these programs are quite significant. I will also say that I didn't bring it with me, but if you go out to the Pew results website, they actually have put together a national database by programs, so that there's a database in California, there's a national database in HUD and DOC, all of them, where they actually said, if you're looking at juvenile justice specific to juvenile diversionary or transitional youth from 18 to 24, here are the programs in other best practice databases that we feel that you should be aware of are worth looking at. So think of enhancing your policy-making conversations and decisions starting at a frame of what's already out there and is working, is how I would respond to that. It is not in lieu or replace or against any other work that's being done.
Representative Mack.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, just to that point, I'm vaguely familiar with what you're referring to, Representative Mulder, but I don't know a great deal about it, other than it's my understanding that is more limited to corrections and with the Department of Justice. I think what's exciting about this proposal, and particularly for the people in this room, is that the build-out potential for the human services aspect of our decision-making is there. They start with corrections because, as Mr. Harder pointed out, it's got the most amount of data, and it's a good way to get a win right out of the gate. But the build-out in terms of how it could affect our decision-making in the realm of health and human services, the biggest and fastest-growing area of our budget, is there. And I think that's what should be exciting for the people sitting around this table.
Representative Mullery?
Madam Chair, Representative Mack, that program does get hugely into human services, because almost every human services if you're doing a really good reinvest in justice program, you're bringing in almost all the universe of human services and the education system. So does it go way beyond what would be the real, when they talk about corrections, they really mean bringing in a lot of other things. And I don't know, I just think we should get a little more and bring in where they're going before we, you know, finalize this type of thing. Unless this is totally separate from that. Maybe we can just eventually get some more info on how this works with that, or how this is separate, and have them also communicate to us.
Mr. Harder?
Yep, Madam Chair, Representative Miller. You know, so first, I am meeting with corrections staff tomorrow, and I think I would really, once again, I want to throw some caution to the wind. This isn't a corrections-only initiative, and I don't believe that this has to be an either-or proposition. This can be a both-and. So how do you both get the tools and the value that you could from this? In addition, it shouldn't be seen to keep corrections from doing the best practice, innovative and emerging best practice from the country that they're doing, because they've done that and they do that. But we could have the same conversation in public in health and human services, whether you want to go children's mental health, adult mental health, do we want to talk about disabled, do we want to talk about health care reform. You know, in Dakota County, we don't even talk less about the departments anymore. You know, every door, it's an access point. And whether they come in corrections in their youth or social service in a youth or family home visiting, we're there to serve them regardless of what department. I want to know what program and intervention that touches that family and whether or not it has a good return on investment, when and where I can apply that methodology to the programming. I really want to throw caution that this is a corrections-only model. It is not, and I would encourage you to look at all of the programming, and nor should it ever be seen or used to prevent corrections, human service, public health, or any others from doing continued work in the area of return on investments.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Chair Peterson. I think my question might be directed towards Chair Mack. If you look at the bill language, it sort of requires the use of this methodology with this specific organization. So on line 1.9, it says, you know, that the Pugh MacArthur Results First framework has to be used. On line 1.12, it says that the commissioner has to work with Pugh MacArthur Results First. I mean, Pugh and MacArthur are highly reputable organizations, so I certainly don't have any reason to doubt that this is a very strong methodology, and this is certainly an impressive document that was handed out here. I guess I'm just wondering if it's sort of common to name specific groups like this. I mean, there could well be other organizations that do comparable return on taxpayer investment work. Representative Schultz mentioned there are other methodologies out there. Representative Mullery mentioned CSG and the Department of Justice as examples. I mean, it just seems to me it might be more common to direct MMB to conduct this work without naming organizations in the bill, require them to put out an RFP. I just worry if legislation follows this approach, you could have legislators naming favored groups. I mean, I don't think that's what's happening here. You know, as I mentioned, this is an impressive document. I guess I'm just wondering what the chair's thoughts on that are. This is the best way to write the bill.
Representative Mack.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know that Mr. Harder can follow up on this also, but I do appreciate that, Representative Freiberg, and understand the concern when you start to spell out specific organizations. What we're going for here, though, is this very specific methodology and trying to get into this program by which we can participate and gain understanding from other states. It's a unique opportunity, in my opinion, a great opportunity. And so while it's not common, it has been done. I've, you know, voted on and seen legislation that's gone across our desks that in kind of a similar vein will point out a specific organization for the state to work with. I think it's a good question to be asked in this particular situation. I think that the goal we're going after in this particular methodology and the ability that we have to impact human services and all these other areas kind of necessitates that this is the direction that we go. And I also know that MMB, from meetings, is glad to see a bill coming that kind of just gives direction to do this versus some of the approaches in the past to study, to look and see what might work. You know, at this point, I think we're all starting to look for let's just get in and start doing this and stop talking about it and planning and studying. So to that point, Mr. Harder.
Mr. Harder.
Madam Chair, Chairman Mack, thank you. Representative, how, to the best of my knowledge, and I've done a significant amount of research in this area, I've spoken to Pew, I belong and I'm the chairperson of the National Association of Human Service Directors, Locals Council, all the counties across the country, and there is no other organization or center, if you would, that has housed this significant amount of work. It was the Washington State Institute on Public Policy. That is the only place. Now, I guarantee you this, every one of you could grab your cell phone and call a professional consulting company. I'll give you numbers. Every one of them are willing to do this for you. And they're capable of doing it. And the universities are capable of doing it. It's not that they have a corner market on doing cost-benefit analysis. That's not it at all, nor do they have some magic way of doing it. But what they've packaged and have experienced, I think, that is unique, is number one, it's an off-the-shelf, and they bring technical support to the state. I know of no other organization that'll do that. They bring the methodology to the state. I know no other organization out there that has done that. And I'm going to go back to the beginning, because if we don't start somewhere, then when are we going to start reforming our system and stop admiring that we're admiring the idea of a return on investment and actually start putting products down? But having said that, I want to go back. It's not in lieu of or replace of or better than the work that's already being done. You had testimony in the previous committee before this one of the CRAFT project that's done down in Olmsted County and in other counties that are happening. Why is that such a predominant successful program? Because they did do their return on investment as well. They did a cost-benefit analysis. That doesn't mean CRAFT has to be run through the pew in order for it to have validity. It doesn't. And I think that that's the other thing we'll have to guard against, is there's one filter that only a bill can come through. But it does give you a method that has uniformity and consistency for all of you, so that a different model doesn't come in, because I'll guarantee you now you'll start a debate on what the validity of the model is and who did the model and whether they're one side of this aisle or so that side of that aisle. This brings a nonpartisan rigor and experience, would be my feedback to your question. That was very valid.
Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Mack. I think, you know, this is a good thing for us to be pursuing. I had the pleasure of being a co-chair of the Bipartisan Redesign Caucus. I think some people here were members of that, and we actually had Pew come in and talk to our group and look at it. I think, you know, there's a couple of things we need to weigh. One of the things, I think there was a general consensus that no one does nonpartisan better in the state of Minnesota than House Research and our fiscal analysts. They've worked under both parties. They've proven to be trustworthy no matter what your political stripe is. And, you know, for better or for worse, that has not always been as highly regarded as part of our state agencies, and I would say that's based on both Republican and Democratic governors. And so the thought was that if we were to do this, we would house it within the legislature, which means creating some, you know, House Senate sort of understanding of that. But we have the legislative commissions. We have the legislative commission on planning and fiscal policy that could be the overseer of it. And so there was some interest that way. Now, this is the first biennium that we've been able to approach a budget with a surplus because of choices that were made in the last term. And so when we were looking at it in the past, it was always in that deficit regard, and you're taking money away from existing programs or underfunded programs as you're cutting things. And so there was discussion with outside funders as well as I think some discussions with the university and others. And it was interesting that whenever you try and talk about outside money, then they have their own ideas of who should be in charge and who's in the table and setting the agenda. You know, I think, and then we got to the end of session and, you know, nobody was able to put the dollars and resources together. But I think that if we're going to look at this, you know, again, I think we really need to look at, you know, what is the best, most trusted place for us to get, as policymakers, to get nonpartisan objective analysis and make sure that the results come through. The other thing is, the reason they started with corrections is because that's the place where there's the most a lot of the most research. It's the easiest way to track recidivism. It's easier to get the data. And we're unique in human services in that there aren't that many states that have a county-delivered state, you know, supervised system of human services. Human service data is collected in all different ways across the states, so there's just less research. The Washington state model is based on metadata of looking at all the research across the nation and winnowing out which one is credible and what isn't, and they've got a very sophisticated model that you can only make work if you've got metadata to look at. And in our area, this committee's area, there's less of that. And so that's why they started there, I think, almost two decades ago. And so some of the work that they've outlined in corrections is actually, I think, a little dated now, even though they continue to gather data and how it's working. But, I mean, some of the original findings are sort of there. And so I think that as we go forward, we should think about what is the best location for this. And then really whether or not, given how we have structured our delivery system and the antiquity of our current data systems, and, you know, Mr. Harder knows that well, whether or not, you know, we're in the best position at this point in time to have as much of a success on the human services side as in the correction side. And I'm not being critical at all. I'm just saying those, I think, are questions we were weighing as a bipartisan group and in discussions with some people from MMB and from academia in terms of looking at this model. And so I really think if we're going to move forward, we should think about locating it within the nonpartisan staff of the legislature in partnership with the administration. It has to be a joint partnership. They have the keys to a lot of the data, and you want them to use that in their decision-making as well. But that's just some background for others who've gone there, and that as we move forward with this bill, Representative Mack, I'd be glad to get, you know, some materials to you or contacts if that would be helpful.
Okay, so I didn't hear a question in that, no. So we'll just take that information unless you wanted to add anything, Representative Mack. Okay, and then we'll move on to Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I would like to say that, you know, I believe in the idea of a cost-effective analysis. I think it's a really good thing to look at your return and your investment, that, you know, and to look at evidence-based practice. I really support that idea. But my first question is around the $200,000 that you're asking, requesting. And I think what I heard you say is that $100,000 per year will be given to an individual to kind of like be the liaison between the PUB and the state. Could you make some clarity around that?
Representative Mack?
Representative Moran, I don't know if you were asking that to me or the testifier. It's my understanding that in working with MMB and something that we've done in the past, that would make sure to, you know, for that FTE that would be needed for that liaison between us and Pew. Now, whether or not... I'll defer to Mr. Harder on this, because I think you were in touch with MMB in terms of where that number came from specifically.
And the way I read the bill here, it says the Commissioner of the Management and Budget would make that decision, but Mr. Harder?
Madam Chair, Representative, it's allocated dollars to assure that resources to dedicated so we have a liaison. And in this case, if it's MMB or if it goes elsewhere, regardless of where it goes, there needs to be dollars committed to a position that serves as a liaison with the representatives from Pew for implementation so that we can be successful with that implementation. There'd be a liaison to sit at the table with the other states across the country of the 14 who are doing this work in other counties as well. And, you know, whether that's the right amount, I have spoken to Pew about how much FTE, if you would, staff it would take for implementation. Their experience in other states has been that between 0.6 and 0.1 FTE, depending on the aggressiveness, how broad, how deep, what programs you choose, would be adequate to get it off the ground.
Madam Chair.
Representative Moran.
So in basic English, we're going to pay one person $100,000 to be a liaison.
Mr. Harder?
Mr.
Year.
Representative, those would those are dollars allocated to assure that there's funding for that position, whether it would totally cost $100,000. When you take a position of this level that it would take to do this work, of professional experience and others with benefits and others, whether it costs $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, I'm not sure. I don't run the books of MMB, but I would say that around $100,000 for a fully loaded FTE working full-time is in a ballpark.
Okay, Madam Chair. So what I have seen here since I've been here in my little short time is that, you know, so often we bring evidence-based practices before the body, and a lot of times we have negated it, right? We negated it because of our ideology or, you know, our beliefs and other kind of things like that. And to me, I'm struck here because I really believe in, you know, looking at a cost-benefit analysis and looking at really what do that look like, who are we engaging in that process, you know, who's making, who's a part of creating that and bringing the analysis for, is it a diverse group of people, different bodies, and, you know, what did that look like, really, to me, would be a part of how effective it really is. But again, so often, you know, that evidence practice has not always been the direction that we have gone in as a body. And to me, until we begin to change our practice here and say we are committed to, you know, the data that becomes before us as evidence-based, it's, you know, it's a, like a by chance that maybe we will do that. Or maybe we'll begin to look at evidence-based practices, or maybe we will change our practice here in the body. And so I agree with Representative, I am going blank here, Loeffler, that, you know, how do we bring in an independent source to be the collector of the data? You know, and then how do we wrap our mind around as a body to say that we are committed to looking at evidence-based practices and to invest in that to create better outcomes so that we can be a little bit more cost-effective in the way that we are spending money here as a state.
Mr. Harder, any response?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative, my only response, I appreciated your point. I believe you were making more than a question to me, but I would say that this may be the very possibility that you're calling out, which many of us do come here and testify, and we say, well, here's our return on investment, here's our cost-benefit analysis. But I think by the legislature, because we've never crossed this path, this is the third year I think we've run this bill, and most people agree with the concept. But this would be a new marker to cross as a legislative body to say, we're endorsing that we're going to do this work, and this is the frame we're going to. Now, whether you do or you don't, I'm not going there. And whether you decide to use it or not, that is up to you. But I will say this has value beyond this room. It has value at a state level, and I tell you it has a lot of value at a county level because we also are levying local dollars and invest a lot of dollars as well. So this has potential utility well beyond this room, and it itself has a return on investment beyond this room and other policy-making rooms. They will help county boardrooms. They will help programs at, across the state, medium, large, and small. And so that's why I stay around this for the third or fourth year now, believing. I think it really does make a point that we're going to finally start reforming that. Now, where and what you do with it all, that's up to you. So,
one final.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I'm also at the degree with, you know, looking at a bill before us that's allocating money to a specific entity, you know, and we have seen this happen, you know, many other times, and it was my hopes that not only in this committee that I've heard in other committees that we are moving away from direct allocations to entities. And so I just bring that up because here we are again.
Representative Benson?
Madam Chair.
Representative Mack.
Just briefly to that point, I do appreciate the concern. I do just want to point out that this, and clarify that this is not an appropriation to Pew MacArthur. This is an appropriation to the Commissioner of Management and Budget to use a certain methodology, bring in a tool to use, but it is not an appropriation to a specific entity.
Yes, Madam Chair. And I would agree.
Representative Moran.
I misstated myself about the direct appropriation, but to use a specific entity.
Okay. Representative Franzen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And I kind of want to echo just a little bit off of Diane Loeffler, but first I just have to say that $100,000 seems to be quite a deal compared to what we paid Gruber to design Mincher. So just a little dig at that. But just the accountability with MMB, that they are running the analytics correctly and not picking projects that they want to show that are showing return on investment. Any thoughts on that?
Mr. Harder?
Madam Chair, Representative Franzen, I would suggest that another layer of value in working with Pew is that when they come into the state and help, they want to set us up for as much success as we can have, because if we have it, they have it. And their goal really is that this become a national-wide model. You saw that it was national, their executive director in this space, and then focused on some work being done down in Iowa in particular. But I think that's exactly why the year one is about setting it up to address these very issues. I would also say the challenge here for all of you as elected representatives is to not send it over to a department and do the hands off. You know, how do you stay actively involved that this becomes part of your norm and culture here here, and that you stay involved and engaged, and not just directive only, but also engaged to assure that doesn't happen so you're getting your needs met as well.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mack, thank you for bringing this bill. During the summer, I attended a conference where I learned about this Results First initiative, and I was so interested in it that I actually called him up and had a discussion with Pew about this, because I also was thinking this is something that we should move toward and do, and I remembered that you had some interest in this as well, and I said, and I was very intrigued with the discussion that I had with them. But what sort of stopped me is that, at least at that time, they told me, I, of course, was interested in this for Health and Human Services. And they, as I recall, they were pretty firm in telling me, no, it has to start with corrections, because it's kind of designed for that. That's where the data is. That's where they have the expertise. And I, frankly, lost a little bit of interest in it as an immediate thing, because I don't do any work in corrections, and they were very firm in telling me that that was where this had to be implemented first, at least. So one of my questions is kind of, and I know you've discussed this a couple times, Mr. Harder, you've talked about, well, it's going to be in Health and Human Services. I'm kind of a little skeptical about that, just because of what I heard from them this fall. Okay, so that would be the first thing. I mean, of course, that wouldn't stop us, because corrections, great, wonderful, if those committees want to do it, maybe that's the place to start. So that's one thing. The second thing, though, is, you know, some of the discussion here and some of the unease with this that I'm hearing, I wonder if the bill couldn't be written. The bill as written right now is sort of self-activating. It doesn't come back to us when they've done the initial work to sort of get the stamp of approval. And I'm wondering if that would be helpful. It just has it, it has the commissioner basically working with other people to implement the established methodology. And I'm not sure if you need that language to get started, or if there could be some kind of an intermediate step, you know. But having said that, with those two questions, I mean, I really support the concept. I'm really interested to hear from my colleagues around the table about their concerns about it, and I certainly think that, you know, for me it was kind of just, oh, look at this great new thing. It sounds so wonderful, you know, so got to kind of check that against the reality of other people's experience and concerns. But you know, I obviously, my name's on the bill, and that's very intentional, because I thought this was a really great idea. And I've been pushing members who bring bills before this committee, especially tax bills, but all kinds of bills. You know, how are we going to evaluate it? How are we going to know if it's working? And I really think we need to do that, because we've, you know, every dollar we have to spend is precious. We need to make very difficult decisions, even when we're have a surplus situation like we do now. You know, we've got obviously many, many more needs in the state than we can ever really meet, and so we have to be very sure that we're spending our dollars in the very best places, and I think we all share that. So those two questions I have for you about how do we get to human services here, and then maybe a second step before implementation.
Mr. Harder?
Madam Chair, Representative Lieben, thank you so much for your comments. So I have had that explicit and candid conversation with the Pew folks as well. And, you know, when it comes down to it, we're not prohibited. Their response to me, well, first off, most all the states they're in are state supervised, state run. So you're absolutely right. And their experience has been they have to be able to get, I mean, at the end of the day, can we get the data, the metadata? Can we get the data that needs to be analyzed? That's the fundamental question. Where they've been able to get most of the data that's clean and able to do their work has been corrections. It's where they have. But I would have to say the response to me was, if you can get us the data, we'll do the analysis. And the other thing is, you know, corrections gets a lot of the conversation, and they do know, and where they've had most success is out of the gate in corrections with states, but that has always built on each other, and then you scale out, and you can't dismiss all the other programs that they do this work in. So that, though that's where they like to start, I don't think it precludes us from being directional and asking the question to say, well, we want to start in corrections and a human service program. I think we have every right. They've told me, well, if that's where you want to start, you know, it's your state. You can start where you want to start. The other thing is just recently they've also started working with counties in California where it's a state-supervised county-run system similar to ours, and they'd be very interested as well partnering to figure out where they were at. And I can't answer, I wish I could, if they're starting just in corrections or human services there as well. I think I will, Chairman Mack, in response to, I think, your conversation about the legislation and the language about rolling it out.
Representative Mack.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess maybe just a quick question back to Representative Liebling. If you could maybe just restate your question, I'm not sure if I followed your concern with the language or the self-starting mechanism. If you could maybe just explain that.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks, Representative Mack. Well, as I'm sitting here looking at the bill, which is just a one-paragraph bill, it looks to me like that. Let's see, the second sentence from the bottom, it's kind of a long sentence. Commissioners shall engage and work with staff from Pew MacArthur Results First and shall consult with representatives of other state agencies, et cetera, to implement the established methodology. And then it has the commissioner of MMB reporting and making some kind of recommendations. But so it kind of sounds like when we pass this bill and it gets signed into law, we're authorizing something not just to kind of get ready and come in and crunch our data and tell us where we can go, but actually get it all started. And I don't know. I mean, frankly, I'm not worried about the 100,000. I view that as not a problem because I know that Pew and MacArthur, they're supplying us. This is not where we have to buy from them for $200,000. This is, we have to just do this little piece, and they're going to come in and, you know, these foundations are going to do this with us. That's kind of, so we're getting a lot here for this small amount of money, but I just wonder if there wouldn't be a more clear sort of stopping point for us before we do make any significant investment, and whether at that point we could, you know, like Representative Loeffler's comment about House research being involved, or kind of who then grabs it and takes it forward, all those issues, when we know more what they're proposing, we could maybe bring it back and flesh it out a little bit for Minnesota.
Representative Mack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do appreciate that, and we'll just take the minute to thank you for your support of this issue, Representative Liebling, and you were kind enough to give me a hearing in the past on this issue. But I will say, and would be happy to keep talking about it, I guess the one, in terms of how this is written, I guess the way I was envisioning it and the way I read this is that this does get it up and running and pays for that FTE for those 2 years. And then at that point, they come back and we know what, we've been given some data, we know whether or not that's working. And then the legislature at that point, after getting that report January 31st of 2017, decides if that's something that they want to, if they want to continue paying for that FTE, if they want to continue to move that down the pipeline, if it's proved to be a valuable tool. And so, you know, again, that can be evaluated again at that point in terms of if it's in the best area, if it, we should move it to the legislature in terms of housing, the methodology. But I guess my interest is certainly, we've been working on this for a couple of years, but trying to get in and kind of put the meat on the bones of getting this thing working so we can start to actually see if it's something we want to continue to invest in. And so that's the way I envision this language, is to, you know, empower the Commissioner of Management and Budget to start to kind of put the wheels in motion on this. And so I guess that was my intent, understanding that they'll report back. There's no more funding after 2017. At that point, the legislature determines whether or not it's been a useful tool.
Mm-hmm. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And in my professional career, I've always had a hat of quality, you know, data analysis, monitoring, improvement, but I've worked with at Hitachi, at Motorola, at IBM. They had different systems. They had some things the same. And, you know, frankly, if you pick a good system, you go forward with it, but you do it across. You don't have one in part of your organization, a different one in another, because it's not as effective, and you, in the long run, it costs more. So, you know, the question of is this a good one to pick? When I see New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Washington, Oregon, California, and Illinois, and then I see Texas and Kansas and New Mexico, one thing I can tell you, that there's a diverse philosophy in government and programs in these states. And that when they pick the same system, and frankly, if you're the big states, you pick, it matters, it affects the whole, groundwork. And so the big states, small states, which side of the spectrum states are using this, to me that says there's credibility no matter what your personal philosophy is, because when it comes to data and facts and getting things right, it doesn't matter what your philosophy is, because people that care about the citizens that are getting the services pick what's best. Now, the discussions about corrections, if you look at what was handed out, I also see a section on children's mental health, general prevention, substance abuse, pre-K-12. And so it's obvious that it's effective in all these different areas. So I don't have as many concerns, because I have confidence that if you choose one of the top products, that's going to work for you if you buy in and decide that you're going to do it. And frankly, I think we've been playing around long enough, and it's time to belly up to the table and buy in and take that step.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, as I've listened to the conversation with regard to the emphasis where this would be housed, and to Representative Loeffler's comments, I'm just wondering, you know, we do have a nonpartisan organization that does do reviews for our various agencies, and that's the Office of Legislative Auditor under Mr. Nobles, who is a nonpartisan individual, and I hold him in the highest regard for the work that he's doing. And so rather than use an agency such as MMB, which might be a little bit squishy in terms of what side of the political spectrum you're on from time to time, and we all know elections have consequences, the emphasis may or may not be there consistently. And so from a continuities perspective, my only observation from what I've heard thus far would be to house it in an agency that we all appreciate the work that has been done, and understand and appreciate the rigors that they go through. And so from an instructional standpoint, whether you call it one FTE or a grant appropriated to the OLA for the purposes of establishment or conduct research on this, I think, you know, that's where you can split hairs on. But I would just raise that point. But Mr. Harder, to a point that hasn't been raised, and I'm just curious if in your exploration of this Pew function, to what extent can you bifurcate between state and federal funding as they're combined, but then are you subjecting this analysis to not only the state program but also the federal intrusion on it, and how do you separate those two so that you actually appreciate what the state's funds are doing as compared to what the federal funding might blur the lines, if you will, Madam Chair?
Mr. Harder?
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the challenging question. And I'll even challenge it one further layer. And how does the county clarify the blur that they might see the state is having and the federal government, right, on all these programs? So not being myself personally familiar with the sophisticated methodologies that they use, that's really in the applied economic space, that they have the economists and social scientists that do that work on that back end. The rigor I have seen and the significant amount of work that is behind what they come up with, I can only have confidence in the fact that the work that they do, that they would be able to tease out the difference of the cause and effect of that. That when you look at a cost benefit, you clearly, to your point, very astutely, have to delineate out cost to who and what's that investment. Our return on investment we did on jail reentry at the county had the county dollar, had the local city dollar, had the state dollar, and had federal dollar, and we were able to tease out the difference of that.
Madam Chair?
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To that then, we are talking about an ROI, and as we talk about ROI on $100,000 or $200,000 over a biennium, what would be your expectation, based upon your experience with this program, in terms of an ROI over those first 2 years? Would you see fruit from that emphasis? And my point goes to establishment of the data collection and the understanding of what metrics are going to be used. Would there be validation of the investment put into it by some type of a return on investment calculation done on various programs, whether it be in the criminal justice system at the state level before the biennium is over?
Mr. Harder.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, I wouldn't be sitting up in front of you in the role that I play if I didn't think we at least, I think what would be a great return on investment is we get the infrastructure built, we get the operations functioning as they have in other states. We have ourselves sitting at the table with other states to expedite certain analyses that might be going, and that we minimally have, pick the number, 2 to 4 programs gone through the evaluation, minimally 2. To get a start, it's a starting point. I want to go back, and this is fundamental. It's a starting point. We aren't going to have a portfolio that looks like this. This is 15 years. Well, it was done in 11, I believe, but you know they've done more than that. But I think that the ramp-up can be expedited by the mere fact of 14 other jurisdictions across the country having already started this work. So we better have something tangible to bring back, or I guess I'll come sit in front of you and own up to that as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Mr. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the witness brought up, I was just going to point out, the witness brought up California and the study there. California made a huge change in their correction system and shifted a whole bunch of things to the counties. So I believe Pew is the one that got, you might say, stuck into that mess, and that's what happened there. So it's totally the corrections.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to, I'm all in favor of doing return on investment and cost-benefit analysis of all of our programs to find out where we can get the highest return for every taxpayer dollar. You know, my husband's a criminologist, and he works with the Commissioner of Corrections, Tom Roy, and he does analysis on our corrections data and data from drug courts and et cetera, and what he tells me is our data isn't very good. And if you don't have the data to populate the model, you can't do the modeling. So I think a first good step would be to find out what data is collected, what data is not collected from all of our agencies, and give them direction on this is the data you need to populate these ROI models. And I think that's a really good first step. And I don't know if you have to put that in the legislation, but I think you have to do that. And I don't know if we can get any tangible report in 2 years, Representative Albright, because we might not have a lot of the data that they use in their modeling. And that's really hard. It's both hard in the corrections and not in on HHS side and the programs in health services and human services. So that's just one thought. But I do want to support us moving forward and looking at ROIs. And the other thing is there's a lot of different modeling out there. It's free in academic journals to get a cost-benefit or ROI model to use that. What's harder is to get people with the skills to analyze that model. And I'm a little confused about this. I thought that internally we were going to do the analysis. But based on your past statement, it sounds like they do the analysis for us, but we have someone working with them to get them the information they need to do the analysis. It's still not clear to me who's actually doing the analysis of the data.
Mr. Harker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I agree with you about the quality of the data issue because I'm in it all the time, every day. I will say that my understanding is when Pew comes in, one of the first things they do is a data environmental scan, and they will themselves look at what we can get and make recommendation back about where they might want to start. And I think to your astute point of saying, based on that environmental scan, they may say your highest quality data based on what we do and analyze may not have anything to do with corrections. It might go to another department program area. We also have to remember in Minnesota, I'm not sure if all of you know, but the state corrections data sits in a county-owned, county-operated data system. It's CSTS, and so we have all the counties in that. It's not a Department of Corrections database. And so the counties have access, and where most of the counties and the work that's being done in community corrections does allow us access to get to that very data differently than a statewide system. Now, we could have that conversation in SSIS and other programs. We'd have a different discussion to that end. So absolutely, to your point, my understanding, they come in, they do the data analysis, environmental scan. I believe they would work with us on the first initial runs, but their goal is actually to build this capacity and work within the state so that they can then migrate and work with other states that we ultimately would be able to be up on our own feet and be running our ROIs. But what they leave us is, I keep referring to it as the black box that they use to do the methodology itself is what we get, and it's the same methodology that's been used in the rigor out at the Washington State Institute of Public Policy.
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Smith. Madam Chair. And so I think my concern is maybe a little bit the same concern as Representative Albright over there and others who, in looking at on the bill, line 1.15 through 1.17, where the commissioner will come back to a legislature and talk about the implementation progress. You know, so after 2 years, there will be something there, you know, a beginning of something. But in your experience and your expertise, how many years does it take to get to this place here?
Mr. Harder.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Moran, thank you for referring to anything I've said with expertise. I do appreciate that. I should stop while I'm ahead. So this, I believe, began in 1983. And this was generated in 2011. Now, there was a lot of beginnings and newness around this space. I think that would be a good answer for Pew Institute, frankly. I can't speak on their behalf, but one of the questions I would have for them is, you know, so a state says, let's do this. You know, to your question, and frankly, I can get this answer for you, or I will say Pew actually has said they would be more than willing, whether they do an ITV or they come, they would be willing to speak with all of us that I think are they're more expertise than I to answer that very question. I will say that when I referred to our ROI that we had a national affiliate group come in, thanks to the Bush Foundation funding, we had that done in less than 120 days. But they said that had never been done before. Because if we're going to do the rigor that's required, this is not an overnight process. This does take some time. But I also believe that as we do it more often and stay within a similar model, a similar frame that has greater uniformity and consistency, inherent efficiency will come over time.
Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very intrigued and enthused by the line of questioning that we seem to get here. I think the analysis that's going on is amazing in regards to $100,000 expenditure. Maybe it's just a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction to some of the things we've done in the past that maybe we didn't think these things through. But Chair Mack, I would applaud you for bringing such a tool here that shows, as Representative Kwan was talking about, is the number of states that have utilized this, where we actually have results. The Washington State policy says, relative to national rates, juvenile crime has dropped in Washington, adult criminal recidivism rate has declined, total crime is down, taxpayer criminal justice costs are lower than alternative strategy would have required. It sounds like very positive results, so that we have quite an opportunity here. And this sometimes we get into analysis paralysis with our hesitation to move forward, but it seems like we have great results. Mr. Harder, I'm just wondering, I was trying to figure out what their actual, do they actually put a dollar figure on the savings here in something like the Washington Report, or has Pew done anything like that in regards to results because of this?
Mr. Harder.
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Kelly. So I can't answer that specifically. So the question is, has Pew put, what's the value to the state as a whole for having initiated this?
Madam Chair, Mr. Harder, correct.
Madam Chair, Representative Kelly. So I've not seen anything about an overall value to having done all of this work. I have personally spoke to their previous Commissioner of Health and Human Services, and also asked, so do you actually use this? You know, I was like, well, this is really cool. Do you use it? And she said, you'd be surprised how often I'm at the legislature testifying, and the first thing one of the representatives or the senators will say is, so has it been run through the ROI? And it really has become part of the culture, not on everything, and not at the expense of doing other new initiatives at a federal level or state or even locally. You know, don't stop doing good investments and pilots that might just become the next best practice. That won't fit until it becomes a best practice. So this would be a great question. Again, I would suggest that as this goes along the line, maybe we bring Pew and the representative in via ITV or they personally come on board too. I think they could do a really good job. If you're all interested, we could facilitate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now we'll open it up to the public if anyone else would like to share any thoughts on their feelings of this bill. All right. Seeing none, would you like to add any comments?
No, it's been a great discussion, Madam Chair. Thank you. The one thing I just want to reference to members is we had a lengthy discussion on this, and Mr. Harder did already reference the Kraft and a proposal that has been going forward, and that bill, Representative McDonald's bill, was referenced just for informational hearing on your agenda, and Representative McDonald, due to a conflict, wasn't able to be here, but that was simply on our agenda kind of as a point of reference as an ROI and a program that has greatly benefited from that. So I just, for members' knowledge, that's why that was on there, was for informational kind of a reference point. But with that, members and Madam Chair, I would just say thank you for a great discussion. Thank you for a thorough look at a $100,000 request. I don't say that tongue in cheek. I mean, it's, you know, we have to be wise with every tax dollar, but I truly do think that the citizens of the state would be well served by something like this, and knowing that their representatives and their counties are making well-educated decisions, not that we aren't already, but I think we could all agree that there's always room for improvement. And so with that, I would truly appreciate your support and look forward to moving forward on this.
Thank you. And we have one more question from Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to try to answer Representative Kelly's question. So it doesn't sound like the $200,000 over the next 2 years, it doesn't buy us a report or an analysis. I just wanted to clarify that, because it seemed like you thought we were getting something. We're getting individuals to help work with Pew to develop something that we could use to produce analysis. I just want the community to be clear on that. I think that's right, but
Representative Chair Mack can correct me if I'm wrong.
Representative Mack?
Yes, just one moment, Madam Chair.
Well, Madam Chair, I can answer Kelly. Representative Schultz. I was fully aware of that, so thank you for that pointing that out.
All right. Any other further comment, Representative Mack?
Yes, just briefly, Madam Chair. And I was just confirming here with Mr. Harder, who's been more in direct contact with Pew on this. But our understanding has been that as this moves forward and as we put this into motion, that this amount of data across this many programs wouldn't be available immediately. But as we picked programs, we could start to have data back to us a year from now and have that sitting in front of us 1 year from today. And so I don't expect that on January 31st, 2017, we will have nothing in front of us other than the fact that there's some little black box sitting over at MMB getting dusty. we should have data in front of us. To what extent and how much? Yes, it probably won't be three sheets worth, but we will start to see information on the programs that we've wanted to get information back on. So I think that's important for the committee to know.
Thank you. I just wanted to add, too, that we have looked at academic return on investment in the education world for quite, it's really just being started, but not necessarily at the state level, but anytime you can look at doing benefits analysis it can help us make better decision makers as we are the HHS Reform Committee. So I'm excited to see this presented here. And with that, I don't believe there's any further discussion. So we will. I will renew Representative Mack's motion that House File 795 be re-referred to Committee on Public Safety. You want to do it? Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed say nay. Motion prevails. All right. Members, our next meeting is tomorrow from 2:45 to 4:30, and our meeting is adjourned. Thank you.